I know something about you that you may not know about you. I know your heart's desire. I know the desire of your heart. It's another way of saying heart's desire. the desire of teenagers, just like, hand up if you're a teenager. Okay, good, you're awake. If the person beside you is a teenager and they didn't put their hand up, slap them in the face. Thank you. That means you need to put your hand up when you're told to. The desire of your heart, if you are a teenager and you are like every other teenager in Sydney and across New South Wales, the desire of your heart is to fit in. You got that? The desire of your heart is to fit in. That's why we've got subcultures. If you've never heard the term subculture before, you've obviously worked out what that means. I learnt on the ski lifts today of a new one called a North Shore princess. I want to be one of those. That sounds like lots of fun. I've always wanted to be a princess. No, I haven't. But subcultures, we gather together with other people because we feel the need to be accepted. We feel the need to fit in with other like-minded people, with other people who do similar stuff that we might want to do. But more than that, we might fit in with a group who we don't really want to do the things they're doing. But in order to be accepted, in order to feel like we fit in, we just sort of go along with it. It's called peer pressure. We just do what they want to do and we do what the group wants to do, maybe rather than what we want to do. And that's because our heart's desire is to fit in. Our heart's desire is that we need to belong and be accepted with a group of people, whether you're an emo, whether you're a surfer, whether you're a punk rocker, whether you're a skater, whether you're a plastic, whether you're a homeboy, yo, whether you're a jock, whether you're an indie rocker, whether you're a North Shore princess, whatever you are, we have those subculture groupings because of our desire to fit in and our desire to be accepted. But more than that, it shows our desire to be loved. All people just want to be loved. All people just want to know that they're accepted and that they're loved by others. And so the question tonight is, how do you know that you are loved? How do you know that someone loves you? Not just the people in your subculture. How do you know that a teacher loves you? How do you know that a friend loves you? How do you know that your family loves you? And the biggest and most important question is, how do you know that God loves you? How can anyone know that God, the creator of the universe, loves them? That's the question I want to ask as we look at three, almost four stories tonight. You'll work out why it's four stories a little bit later on. We've got a whole bunch of lost and found stories. This is sort of the high point of where we're going this week. Every talk, every study that we do is important, but this is the most obvious lost and found. Hand up if you know the key Bible verse that we've been looking at. Come on, shout it out. If you know it, say it. Jesus? Fantastic, we'll try it together. Jesus came to seek and save what was lost. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Jesus came to seek and save what was lost. Okay, we've got four stories that we're going to look at today. Very, very quickly, the first two. They're beautiful, lost and found stories. And the first two lost and found stories is the one about the sheep and the one about the coins. These are the first two that have just been read out by Lachlan for us. And we won't read over them again. But did you get what happened? The sheep, okay, one goes missing. What does the shepherd do? He busts his gut to get that sheep, to find that sheep and to bring it back. What happens as a result of that?
Party.
They were partying like it was AD 99. Like they were going, it's almost 100. That was the type of party that it was going to be. They were excited because what was lost had been found. And Jesus says, it's a bit like the party in heaven when people who are lost are found. That is, when people who aren't Christian, who aren't followers of Jesus, become Christian. There's a party in heaven. People think that God's boring. No, he's not. He throws parties every single time someone becomes a Christian. And that's exciting. There's another story there, the lost coin. The woman loses her coin. What does she do? She gets the torch out. She gets the mag light. She sweeps through the house. She looks for the coin. What happens when she finds the coin? Shout it out. She throws a party. She rejoices. And Jesus again says, this is just like when lost people are found. So it's not really about sheep. It's not really about a coin. It's about people who were once lost and are now found. Now, on the screen are four photos that are about to pop up. In the top left corner is a photo of my wife, Rowena, and a photo of Daniel and Renee's dog, Riley. In the top right corner, there's a photo of my wife, Rowena, and Daniel Renee's dog, Riley. In the bottom corner, there's a photo of Daniel Renee's dog, Riley. And in the bottom right corner, we've got Rowena, Riley, and David. A couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we were, as aunties and uncles of a dog, we were given the responsibility of looking after the only child slash dog of Daniel and Renee. Now, it was, was it the weekend of the crazy storms or was it the one after?
One after.
The one after. It was the weekend after the crazy storms, so our backyard was still quite wet. And you can see here where that lattice is. Riley, the wonder dog, decides he doesn't like the confines of a backyard. And so what does he do? He digs under the fence, gets into our neighbour's backyard, hurdles the fence. He goes all over the central... Okay, he goes all over East Gosford. He was seen at the pub. No joke. He was seen all over different parts on East Gosford. And we were freaking out. Okay, Daniel and Renee, their loved dog. We hated it, but we were given the responsibility of... No, we don't hate the dog. We don't hate the dog. We were given the responsibility of looking after it, and we spent hours looking for that dog. We worked out in a suburb that has about, I don't know, this much room. We did about 100 kilometres of driving in the space of a day as we looked for it. Rose running across the oval, it's pouring down, and I go, Riley! Riley! Come home! Could not find it anywhere. We went door knocking. We found people who'd seen it. We found people who almost ran over it. We found people who went to the pub with it. We found all sorts of different people, but we couldn't find the dog. And Daniel and Renee were on the phone to them every hour. They were freaking out. You know when this photo was taken? When we'd found it. We didn't find it. He hooked up with some Sheila, went down to one of the... No, he didn't. He went... Someone took him to a vet, and it was one of the vets that we didn't ring. We went to the pound a whole bunch of times, and he was in a vet's place overnight, kicking back while we're outside looking for him. But can I tell you, we were ready to have a party the second we found that dog. When we worked out that it wasn't dead, that we didn't have to take a collar with a dangly body back to Daniel and Renee, we were so excited. And Daniel and Renee were so excited, we were overjoyed. That's something of the picture that we see with the lost sheep, the lost coin, and when people become Christian. It's even bigger. Times it by 2 to the power of 50 trillion. Work out what that is. James in our group from last night probably can. Well done, James. It's very, very exciting. God throws parties when people become a Christian. God throws parties when the lost are found. The third story is about the rebel. The rebel. And the rebel... the rebel takes up most of the chapter. We haven't had it read out yet, so I'm going to read it. But basically, let me tell you before we begin. The rebel says to his dad, one of the worst things you can say to anyone, in particular, one of the worst things you can say to your father or to your mother. Dad, I wish you were dead. That's basically what the lost son, you may have heard of him called the prodigal son, we've called him the rebel, that's basically what he says to his dad. Have a look at it. Sentence number 11. It says, Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share. He probably didn't say it in that voice. He was probably a homeboy. He's going, yo, dad, give me my share of the estate. Yo. So he divided his property between them. When do you normally get your father's estate?
When he dies,
that's when you normally get an inheritance. What's he saying to his dad? Dad, I wish you were dead. I want me gear now. I want to go and party. That's what he's saying to his dad. So what does his dad do? He does it. And his dad would have been humiliated. What happens when you sell property? Tell me some of the things.
You get money.
You get money. What else? What does the real estate agent do when you first decide you're going to sell your property?
Advertises.
Advertise. Where do they advertise it?
Outside your house.
Everywhere. They put it in the magazine. So back in downtown Jerusalem, it was in all the local magazines, the real estate lift out in the Sunday Herald. It was everywhere. But in particular, there were for sale signs, bang, 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 on the front yard of this big property. Everyone would have worked out why the father was selling his property. Why? Because his son hated him. Everyone would have worked out just how awful the son was to his father. The father was humiliated by the fact that the son said, "Dad, I wish you were dead." Let's see what happens after he gets the property. Sentence number 13, it says, "Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living." Okay? He goes and has parties. Not the parties that we've just heard about. Not the celebration parties. But the awful parties. The ones where your head's sore the next day. The ones where you don't know who you've just woken up next to. The ones where you've got substances in your system that may kill you. One of those types of parties. That's the parties that this son went and lived it up doing in the city when he left. Sentence 14, after he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So, sentence 15, he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. You see the desperate situation he's in now? His father sold the property, given him his share of the property, and he's gone and wasted it in wild raves, wild parties, wild nightclubs. He's done crazy, crazy things and ruined it all, spent it all, and he's now in such need that there's a famine. He can't get any food, and he goes and gets a job, but the pigs are eating better than him. That's how desperate this man's situation is. And so in sentence number 17 there, keep following along, it says, when he came to his senses, he said, How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still... Oh, we'll stop there. Do you see what's going on? He works out, look, the servants of my dad's property, the bit that's left, man, they've got it better than me. They're eating better than me. I can't even get to eat what the pigs are eating. So he thinks, I'm going to go back. He works out his spiel. He works out his speech that he's going to say to his father. And then he goes back. But the second half of sentence 20 then, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Now, why do you think the father saw him? Say that? He's looking for him. It's not as if the father's kicking back watching the Saturday afternoon footy. The father is looking for his son, longing for him to come. And you see what his father does? His father again humiliates himself. His father's already been humiliated in the selling of the property, in the shame brought upon his family, in the shame brought upon him for his son saying, Dad, you are dead. And now he runs out. That's not what Jewish guys did 2,000 years ago. He would have had to hike up his pants. He would have had to run out. That in itself would have been a spectacle. That in itself would have been a humiliating thing for the father. But he does that out of what? Compassion. Out of love for his son who was lost and is about to be found. Have a look at sentence 21. The son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. You see the party? You see the picture? You see the fantastic news, the lost son, the dead son is now alive, he's now found. The father loves him that much. The father goes looking for him. The father brings him back into the family. The father throws him a party. A number of years ago, this is a guitar if you haven't yet worked that out. There's a story just like this story of a Brazilian girl named Christina. It's a true story. And Christina, just like the son, just like the rebel, said similar words to her mum. Not, Dad, I wish you were dead, but Mum. I wish you were dead. And so what did she do? She packed her bags and she moved to the city. She packed her bags and she ruined her life. And this song is based on a true story about that very point. And it's fantastic in showing us something of the Father's love for the Son in this parable here. Been talking a lot. She said, Mother, I'm leaving here, I'm leaving home. The city, it calls me, I'll be fine there on my own. The months passed by, a mother grew worried for a child. Her heart was filled with pain. Her daughter was now a whore to feed the syringes that stabbed her veins. His love is much like a mother to a child, and though she may she went to the city to try to find the baby she once nursed and fed. She entered a passport photo booth and took portraits of herself. Then she posted the portraits on the brothel walls and the refuges and alleyways. That song? Did you hear the words of the note that the mother writes? Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please come home to me. I forgive you. And that's exactly what she did. A marvelous real life story. A lost and found story. A daughter who blows it all and ruins her life in the big city Rio. Her mother comes out to find her and the daughter is found. The daughter is forgiven. Do you know what? Jesus wants you to hear those words. Jesus wants you to come back to him. Jesus wants you to hear that whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please come home. I forgive you. That's the message of Christianity. That's the message that Jesus, the one who came on a rescue mission, came to give. Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, come home. Let me encourage you as we keep thinking about these things this week. Maybe it's time for you to turn away from your life that you're currently living and turn back to Jesus and come home to him. I said there were four stories. Number one was the sheep. Number two were the coins. Number three was the lost son, number one. And number four is the forgotten brother. The forgotten brother. I'd like to call him the lost son, number two. Let's have a very, very quick look at it. Pick it up where we left off, sentence number 25. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard what? A party. music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What's going on?" "Your brother's come home," he replied. "And your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother, he became angry and he refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeying your orders. Yet you never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf." Sentence 31, "My son," the father said, "you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. Remember, you've divided the property in half, gave half of it to the first son. The rest still belongs to the father, but whose is it? It's the second son's. This is his land. It all belongs to him." But sentence 22, "We had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." One of the common things that we've seen this week as we meet different people that are lost is some realize they're lost and others don't realize they're lost. I'm not sure which one you are. Maybe you're found. That's the other category of person. This second brother, he doesn't realize he's lost. He doesn't realize that he's got a problem with his father. He doesn't have a relationship with his father. He does good things. He hasn't gone and blown his life with prostitutes. He hasn't gone and spent his father's inheritance. He hasn't said to his dad, "Dad, I wish you were dead." He hasn't done those things, but he doesn't have a relationship with his dad. This guy is lost, just like his other brother. We don't actually find out whether he's found or not by the end of the story. We hope that he is found. We hope that he actually comes back to his father and he comes to his senses. And just like his younger brother, we hope that he, in that situation, would no longer be lost but be found. But the point is this. There's two lost sons here. The first one realizes he's lost and the second one doesn't realize he's lost. But both of them get the same call from Jesus. And whichever one you are, whether you've recognized you're lost and you've already come back to Jesus, or whether you just don't think you're lost, you think everything's okay, whichever one you are, the cross of Jesus calls each and every single one of us home. The cross of the Lord Jesus Christ, two bits of wood nailed together that Jesus was crucified on 2,000 years ago, calls you home. Just like that mother who puts portraits of herself with a message on the back. The message on the back of the cross of the Lord Jesus is, "Come home. Whatever you've done, whatever you've become, please come home to me." You see, at the cross of Jesus, which is exactly why Jesus came. Remember, Jesus came to seek and to save what was lost. How does he do that? He does that by dying. Jesus lays down his life for you and for me, for people who realize they're lost, for people who don't realize they're lost. The cross of Jesus calls all of us to come home to God. Because at the cross of Jesus, what's actually going on is Jesus is taking all of our lostness upon himself. What do I mean by that? When Jesus dies, he's taking upon himself our sin. Remember what sin was? Sin isn't just a list of naughty things. Sin is our whole attitude of saying, "God, I don't want you in my life." It's our whole attitude of missing the mark, of falling short. And you know what happens when Jesus dies? He takes the penalty that you deserve. He takes the penalty that we deserve as he hangs there, as he dies. And the message of the cross, the message of a humiliated man 2,000 years ago, he's come home. Do you know how serious Jesus is about you coming home to God? More serious than you can imagine. Jesus died. Jesus died on the cross to call you home. Jesus died on the cross to bring you from death to life. Just like the first son was brought from death to life. Just like other characters we're going to see this week are brought from death to life. The cross is what brings us from death to life. Now, a number of years ago during World War II, there were POW camps. Who knows what POW stands for? Shout it out.
Prisoner of War.
There are prisoner of war camps. And there was one particular prisoner of war camp, and it's a true story, where they were working on railways. Okay? The prisoners were working under those who had them captive, and they were doing some work on a train track. They were doing some work with shovels. They were doing hard work each day. And at the end of one of the days, they did what they normally do. They count all the shovels. On this particular day, there was one shovel missing. And do you know what they said? They said, whoever it was that has taken that shovel, step forward or we'll kill you all. Took a little bit of time, took a lot of threats. Eventually one guy, he steps forward. What do they do right there and then? They shoot him. No one else got shot, just that one man got shot. Later on the same day, that evening, when they got back to the camp, they counted the shovels again. Do you know what they found? They miscounted the first time. There was no shovel missing. That man that stepped forward, what did he do? He died so that all of his mates wouldn't. He knew that if someone didn't step forward, and up until that point no one had stepped forward, all of those guys would have died as well. All of their families would have been without husbands, without sons, without dads when the war was over. That man took the punishment for something he didn't do. You know what happens when Jesus dies on the cross? He steps forward and he takes the punishment for us. It's actually the punishment we actually deserve. It's not that there's been some miscounting of shovels or miscounting of sins. All of us deserve to be punished. But Jesus steps forward, and as Jesus dies on the cross, the innocent dies for us, the guilty. Jesus dies for us, not when we're his friends, but Jesus dies for us when we were his enemies. Jesus dies for us when we were a long way from him. And the message of the cross of Jesus 2,000 years ago is the same message that it is today. Come home to God. Jesus is calling you. Don't look to the person beside you. If I had enough fingers, I'd point at every single one of you. There you go. I think I got you all. The cross of Jesus is calling all of us home. Every single one of us is calling us home. Very, very quickly, I want to take you back to the first two verses. We're almost finished. The first two verses, verse number one, verse number two. Sentence number one, sentence number two. I want you to notice there's two different types. Here's what I get you to do. Read verse one and two by yourself or with the person beside you. And there's two different types of people there. Okay, there's one type of person in sentence one, one type of person in sentence two. Quickly read it. You've got 20 seconds. Quickly read it, and then I want you to shout out who the two different types of people are. Okay, from sentence one, who are the people there? Shout it out.
Tax collectors.
Tax collectors, sinners, okay? These are the filthy, rotten people. These are the bad people. These are the prostitutes. These are the evil people. The people who are dirty, the people who are drug dealers, the people who bash up kids at school, the people who know that they're not living the right way. There's the first type of person. Who's the second type of person? Verse number two.
The Pharisees,
okay, and the teachers of the law. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law. There's the two types of people that are present at this particular series of parables that Jesus is telling. Shh. What I want you to notice is, with both of the sons, there's almost a message for each of those types of people. Which son do you think the message for the tax collectors is?
The first son.
Why? He's the sinful one who has gone off and visibly he's blown it all. Okay. The message to you, if you're someone who knows that you've run a long way from God, is the message to the first son. Come home to God through the cross of Jesus. The second person is the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. They're the second son. And that might be you here tonight. Maybe you go to a religious school or you've grown up in a church and you think that you can stand before God as friends with him but not actually have a relationship with him. You might be someone who thinks that You can stand before God because you're a good and moral upright citizen. And you may well be that. You may not pop the same pills that your friends are starting to do at school. You may not drink the same booze that your friends are starting to drink at school. You may not do the same stupid things that your friends were doing at school. But you're just like the second son. You're relying on yourself instead of relying on Jesus. The message of the cross is the same to both types of people who are here. Whether you know you're an idiot or whether you're a good and moral person, the only way to come to God is through the death of Jesus. It's the same message to both of us. Luke chapter 19 verse 10 says, Jesus came to seek and to save what was lost. I've been encouraging you to see that you are lost and see that you need to be found. Who knows who this is? I did a bit of... Whoa, someone said it's Stuart Diver. Hand up if you've heard of Stuart Diver. I did a bit of a poll with a few people I sat with on the... What's it called? What are they called? The chairlifting things. And there's a bunch that didn't know about him because you may not have been born when these events... You might have been three or something like that. Let me tell you a story. On July the 30th, 1997, almost 10 years ago, at Threadbow. Who's been to Threadbow? Okay, about the same amount of people that knew who Stuart Diver was. On the 30th of July, just before midnight, a landslide occurred. And as a result of it, 19 people were trapped inside one of the chalets. For the next couple of days, they were trying to find if there was anyone alive in there. The next day, they actually heard Stuart Diver. He was alive. Stuart Diver was there, stuck under a big slab of concrete, but he was alive. And it gave the rescue workers hope. They're like, we can rescue this guy. We don't know if there's anyone else alive in there, but this guy's still alive. And it was something like 60 hours later, they pulled him out. And those who are old enough can probably remember the celebrations that took place. Yes, 18 people died, and it was a tragedy. His wife died, and 17 other people died, and it was a terrible, terrible event. But the parties that took place and the joy amongst the rescue workers, the joy amongst the nation, everyone was glued to their TVs for that whole weekend, waiting to see if he would be found. And he was found and there was a party. There will be a party, friends, if you become a Christian. That is, you're stuck under a slab of concrete. The only way you can be rescued is by someone else coming and removing that slab of concrete. Is by Jesus taking your punishment on the cross. And I suspect there's three types of people here tonight. The first type are those who are found. And I've had chats with lots of you over the last couple of days. And there's people here who already know Jesus. And I'm super encouraged. Your leaders are super encouraged that you guys love Jesus, that you know Jesus, that you've already put your trust in him. There's the first type of people here. You're already found. Okay? There's two other types. There's those of you who are just idiots, and you know you're an idiot, and you know you're lost. And then there's those of you who think you're pretty good, but you don't know Jesus. You're not friends with Jesus. You're lost. There's the three types of people. There's people who are already found. Fantastic. But there's two other types, and you may have worked out already over this week, and I think there are some people who are like that. I've heard from some of your letters that some of you are starting to think, I think I'm lost. I think I need to be found. Whether it's because you're a party-going pig, or that's because you're a religious nut and you think you're good enough for God, whichever one of those you are, I'm going to give you an opportunity now to respond. I want you to become a Christian. I said that a few days ago. I want to be upfront about that. This isn't the only opportunity. There's plenty of time to ask more questions, and there'll be another talk tomorrow, another talk on Friday night. But right now might be a great opportunity for you to no longer be lost, but to be found in Jesus. And I'm going to pray a prayer. The sorry, thanks, please prayer. Basically, I'm going to pray three things. And this is for people who have worked out that they're lost, whether you're a religious nut or whether you're just an idiot. The first thing is just to say sorry to God. Sorry, God, that I haven't treated you as God. Sorry, God, that I've sinned against you. Second thing to say is thanks, God. Thank you so much that you loved me. Thank you so much for your compassion. Thank you so much that Jesus died in my place. And then the third and final thing is, please, please now help me to live differently. Please now help me to live as a Christian. I'm going to pray a prayer like that. If that's a prayer you want to pray, pray it. That'd be fantastic. Your leaders would love to know. I'd love to know. And they're getting the party ready right now. Let me pray. Dear God, I am sorry for the way that I have treated you. I'm sorry that I haven't always treated you as God. I'm sorry that I have sinned, and I'm sorry that I've tried to run life without you. Thank you so much for Jesus. Thank you that Jesus died for me. Thank you that Jesus died in my place. Thank you that Jesus took what I deserve and nailed it to a tree. Please now help me to live as a Christian, to live as a follower of Jesus, to live as one who loves Jesus, to live as one who hates sinning, to live as one who seeks to no longer live for themselves, but for Jesus. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. I asked the question at the start, how do we know that God loves us? He doesn't just say it, he shows it. At the cross of Jesus, God shows his love for us. And there's people here tonight that have actually responded to that, have actually prayed that prayer, and the party's beginning. And I want your leaders to know, I want you to tell your friends, if a Christian friend brought you along, if you've got a Christian friend that goes to your school, tell them. Celebrate it. I've got a friend who celebrates two birthdays every year. He celebrates his biological birthday and he celebrates the day that he became a Christian. That's a pretty cool idea. It means you get two parties every year. One because your mum and dad, you know, and the other one because you're a Christian. Let me encourage you, if you've prayed that prayer tonight and you've understood these things for the first time, write the date down. Throw a party this time every year. If you're at the snow again next year, we might even have a birthday cake for you if you've become a Christian tonight. But let me encourage you to talk to your leaders about these things, and it's fantastic news.